Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines. I refer to as USA Inc. Today's date is July 25th, 2016. It is a Monday afternoon here in North Carolina, and it is hot. I'm feeling a little drained today, so if I sound like I'm a little bit out of it during the broadcast, it's because I'm just kind of tired in this heat. I have failed in keeping myself hydrated as much as I should be keeping myself hydrated. So just bear with me on today's broadcast. Let me just quickly go over some of the news stories that I would like to share with you today, and also solicit any commentary from any of our listeners out there that may have an observation or perspective they would like to share with the other listeners on air. So the stories that I'm taking a look at today and providing commentary on is NBA legend and NBA owner Michael Jordan is breaking his self-imposed ban from commenting on social political issues. Decades ago, when he was asked to endorse a former Charlotte mayor by the name of Harvey Gantt for the U.S. Senate seat, and Harvey Gantt was running against a notoriously racist senator from North Carolina. He's dead now, but his name was Jesse Helms. Jordan, when he was asked, he, according to a friend of his, said, well, Republicans buy shoes too, and that's why he was staying out of these social and political issues and not commenting on them. Well, he published an op-ed piece on this website called TheUndefeated.com, and I thought the piece was well-written and thoughtful. And he is speaking out on the killings of citizens and the recent killings of cops alike. Now, I may not, let me put it this way. I have a different perspective on what occurred in Baton Rouge in Dallas, and I'm not throwing any person under the bus for using violence against people who rule us through violence. So, you know, I don't have to condemn and I don't have to condone. But I thought that he was pretty even-handed in his assessment, and I'm going to share that with you. Two children are dead, and 16 other people were injured in an attack on patrons at a nightclub in Fort Myers, Florida. A police official stated that the attack was not terrorism-related, but offered scant details. So I definitely want to look at that from several different angles. A Turkish paper in Russia Today are reporting that a retired U.S. military commander of NATO was the mastermind behind the failed coup attempt in Turkey. The CIA was also implicated, along with a Nigerian bank used to distribute funds to those who attempted to overthrow the government of Turkey. As I wrote on the promo for today's program, it does remind me of a book, and I linked to the video version on YouTube, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, which was written by John Perkins. It may not exactly be the same, but it just reminded me of that, and I thought, you know, if you have not seen or seen a video or read the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins, that, you know, it's worth looking at so that you can get a better understanding how the global system of racism, white supremacy, terrorism, enslavement works. And I also wrote that Martin Luther King Jr. was correct in his assessment over 40 years ago that the United States is the greatest purveyor of violence in the world. As I was scanning Facebook, I know Tando Radio Show, which airs on this network at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, on the program's Facebook page, they were talking about another act of violence that is linked to Mossad. And I don't have the details, but I think Brother Dave will be sharing those later on his program. But it just confirms, you know, MLK's assessment over 40 years ago. The United States is the greatest purveyor of violence in the world. So, again, this is why I don't condemn or I don't condone any acts of violence done towards the liberation of an oppressed people. Because if you want to criticize those individuals, then you must also criticize the CEO of USA, President Obama. You must condemn his cabinet. You might as well just condemn the entire United States government. If you're into, condemning violence, then let's condemn all of the violence. All right, so the last thing, the Democratic National Convention opened today under a cloud of disgrace as the hacked DNC email showed the process was rigged for Hillary Clinton. This has also led to a class action lawsuit against the DNC and the ousted chairperson, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was then given a position in the Clinton campaign. Bernie Sanders complained about the process being rigged 6 months ago. That has been shown to be true based on the DNC internal emails, which were hacked. He's now part of the fraud as he continues to endorse Clinton despite these revelations. I mean, it's just not a logical response for someone to endorse someone who cheated him out of, you know, the nomination. It was not a quote-unquote fair process. And, just a lot of nastiness and unprofessionalism, unethical actions by people associated with Hillary Clinton and the DNC. The Clinton campaign is adept at lying. We know that. And they are blaming the Russians for the hack without offering any kind of proof. Let me tell you something. Just call somebody, say, cybersecurity experts also suspect the Russians hacked into the DNC email. That is not proof. That is not proof, okay? The Clinton campaign is adept at lying, at manipulation, and the emails also show that the mainstream corporate media has been nothing but an echo chamber for the Clinton campaign. And so they have been running with this claim that Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, is trying to help Donald Trump. And, of course, the FBI, the disgraced FBI, after that disgraceful show they put on in terms of telling us how Hillary Clinton violated the law, but they weren't going to recommend any charges because she didn't have no intent to violate the law. Look, there, when you keep something secret, when you try to hide something, that's your intent right there. So this disgraceful FBI is investigating. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they come out and say, yeah, the Russians did it, you know, because the fix is in for Hillary Clinton in more ways than one. So those are some of the stories that I will provide some commentary on as I share the information with you. If you have any thoughts that you would like to share on these stories, please give us a call at 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. Just hit *6 and 1 anytime you would like to be brought on air. You can hit us up on the studio line as well. That telephone number is 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. You can also reach us via Skype, and our Skype handle is Black Talk Radio Network. So you would have to send us a contact request in order for us to add you and take your calls via Skype. Now, before I get into the first story concerning Michael Jordan breaking his self-imposed ban from commenting on social political issues, I just want to again thank all of the hosts of Black Talk Radio who are on this station, who participated in the Black Talk Radio Town Hall on policing yesterday. We had, while all of the hosts weren't able to participate, I think we had over 10 of the hosts participate, and it was a two-hour roundtable discussion, asking two questions: what can the U.S. government, states, governments, and all these other municipalities do to decrease the killings of citizens in our streets and police brutality? And the second question was, what can the people do themselves? So I just, again, want to thank all the hosts who participated, who took time out of their Sunday afternoon to join with us. Please check out their podcast, you know, as the different hosts share their different perspectives. And we will look at doing more of these town hall style broadcasts in the future. Now, I do have some thoughts, some afterthoughts on what was discussed yesterday. Yesterday, it was not really a forum for debating each other on points or whatever it is that a person recommended, but it was just really for the individual host to share their perspective on that issue, and that was pretty much it. We did have a couple of callers who called in and shared their thoughts, but these are the things I was thinking about today from what I heard yesterday. Again, yesterday it wasn't, you know, we weren't there to rebut each other or anything like that. It was a lot of people on the broadcast, and so we just wanted them to be able to share their thoughts. And we are encouraging the hosts to continue these conversations on their individual programs. And so I just want to share some afterthoughts on yesterday. I know that one of the hosts, D of Code Breakers, he said that, you know, if you are looking, you know, to fix the situation through the system, and I must say that the consensus was is that we can't be looking to the government to solve our problem. This is a problem we have to solve ourselves. But me personally, I know at you're going to have to, if you're going to stop the killing, you're going to have to engage with those who are doing the killings. And there is more than one way to engage them. But I'm talking about today specifically is you're going to have dialogue with them. Even when you have two nations at war, you know, there is dialogue through diplomatic channels to, you know, try to resolve it. The conflict, you know. So But here are some of my thoughts. Brother D said that he believes that, you know, no police officer should live outside of the communities that they're patrolling. If they live outside the community, it should be no more than 5 miles. Okay. And I was thinking about that, and I don't know any police department, so I'm, you know, just saying I don't know doesn't mean it's not happening, but I don't know of any who have such a policy in place that the officers patrolling communities, which I don't think they should be patrolling them at all, but they should live in those communities. And so I was thinking about that today, and I was saying, you know what? It's probably by design that they hire a lot of people from outside of the communities that they are policing. And the reason being that, you know, I'm speculating, of course, but I would think that if a person lives in that community and then works in that community, that they may not be so quick to write somebody a ticket. They might not be so quick to arrest somebody and haul them in to jail to face whatever charges and whatnot, that they might try to resolve it without doing all of that. And I have had experiences like that here in Gaston County with officers when I was coming up as a young man, where I may have been engaged in something that I shouldn't have been engaged in, you know, and they cut me breaks. They asked me where I live. I, you know, told them where I was living, and, you know, they pretty much let me go with a warning and what have you. And now, I didn't know these officers or what have you, but I would suspect, though, that in such a scenario where officers are living in the same communities that they are working, that, you know, they wouldn't be so quick, you know, to gun people down. They wouldn't be so, because everybody would know where they live. They wouldn't be so quick to abuse people in the community, you know, because, I mean, they wouldn't. Also, if they view themselves, you know, as part of that community, they're going to empathize with the people in that community, and they're not going to be so quick to use violence on a neighbor's child. They're not going to be so quick to gun down, you know, unarmed woman. And so, you know, that is a good suggestion in terms of working, you know, with the system or the system, you know, doing something policy-wise. But I think it's by design that they don't. So, that's what some of the things I was thinking about today. Also, it was suggested that most of our problems stem, and I'm speaking as a black man, a proud black man, a self-determining black man, who will refer to himself however he wants to. But it was suggested that black people don't know who they are, and that's the reason why they were, you know, suffering the abuse that we suffer as a colonized people in this land. And so I was thinking about that, and, you know, it just doesn't seem logical to me, because every indigenous people that have been colonized, that have been genocided off the face of the planet, they certainly knew who they were. The indigenous people of this land who were here way before thousands of years, possibly before the first Europeans landed here, they certainly knew who they were. They knew their connection to this land, and it did not stop them from having their land stolen, and it did not stop them from being genocided off the face of the planet. So, again, this goes with another observation I made, that regardless of what a person does, whether they're codified or uncodified, whether they are belligerent or respectful in their language, whether they're wearing suits and ties, or if they're sagging, you know, from my observations, it don't matter. Nothing you do determines what another person's going to do to you. There's nothing that you can do that will control another person's thoughts and actions towards you. I mean, the evidence is just it's just overwhelming. You know, all those self-respecting black people who pulled together to build Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, nothing. You know, that didn't stop them from becoming victims of white terrorists. And so, you know, regardless of what a people call themselves, regardless of how much of their own history they know, that has no bearing. I just don't see how that's logical. That has no bearing on how they will be treated by those who want to kill them. You can know you can know all you want to know about yourself and your ancestors. The end of the day, that ain't gonna stop nobody from mistreating you, and that's just the truth for the matter. Now, you know, in terms of will that help people in general to know their history, to know their personal family history and know any ties they may have to this land or other lands? That yes, it's always good to have knowledge of self. Nobody should deny that. But again, that has no bearing on racist terrorists doing what they do. Terrorism. So those are some of my afterthoughts on that. Also, it was brought up about the Dallas police chief, Mr. Brown. I believe it was Mr. Brown. David Brown might be. I'm not sure. But, you know, he put out there in a town hall meeting, I guess, I don't know, some kind of panel, a representative of Black Lives Matter was there. And they were said, you know, if you want to change it, then, you know, we hiring. Come on in and apply for the job and whatnot. And the woman said no. You know, she just shook her head. She wasn't even considering that, you know. And so, again, that's one person in Black Lives Matter. But then at the same time, we have more black cops than ever before in the history of the United States. We got all these black police chiefs. And they ain't been successful in making a difference from the inside. Slave catching still goes on with their participation. They've done nothing to address the racists within their ranks. So, you know, I don't see that as a solution. May it work in some communities? Yeah, if you go back to what D said of Codebreakers, he said, yeah, if they're going to be allowed to police the communities in which they live in, then that could make a difference. But David Brown, he had to admit that if you become a police officer, they can't guarantee where they're going to station you. There's no guarantee that you're going to be working in the community that you live in or where you grew up from. So let's just be real about it. Let's be real about it. But I did read that they have gotten, I'm talking about the Dallas Police Department, have gotten a flood of applications to become Dallas slave catchers. Okay, so, again, you know, individual officers, depending upon where they work, they have discretion. They don't have to keep arresting people for nonviolent drug offenses and whatnot. They, you know, they could give them a referral to get some help or something like that. To me, a crime only occurs when an individual harms another individual. That's the only time, you know. I don't think they have criminalized suicide or anything like that. They try to get you some help. But a lot of these departments have quotas, and we've seen, you know, too few officers speak out against the quotas. I remember a story about a couple of officers protested in Florida about it. I can't remember the city, but I also know the NYPD officers were part of this media a panel discussion, and they said that we're given quotas and we're supposed to hunt you down. You're the prey, we're the hunters. So again, changing something from the inside, you know, you can try, but I don't see much evidence of much success of that being successful. I mean, the system is just too rotten to the core. It needs to be dismantled, and we need to start over. That's what it is, you know. So those are just some of my thoughts on yesterday in our Black Talk Radio Town Hall on policing. All right, I'm going to take a early station identification break, and when I come back, I want to jump into this first story about Michael Jordan. He wrote an op-ed piece for this sports publication, and he's talking about the killing, you know, removing his self-imposed ban on commenting on, I guess I don't see nothing controversial about talking about these issues, but, you know, in his past, he just seemed to be concerned with his own pocketbook and not alienating anyone. So, you know, his career is done now as a basketball player. He really doesn't have a whole bunch of endorsement deals rolling in, but he is a NBA owner of the Charlotte Hornets. And so he's not hurting for any money or anything like that. So, you know, some might say, yeah, you know, sure, he's speaking out now when he really don't have nothing to lose. But let me say this. Anytime a black person speaks honestly about racism in this country, they put themselves at risk. So he is taking some risk there. But I'm also of the mind, better late than never. Better late than ever. So let me go ahead and take that station identification break. Again, let me give out the phone numbers in case anyone would like to share. 641-715-3660, participant code 549-032 pound, hit star 6 and 1 to comment. Studio line 704-951-5030. Hit us up through via Skype, Black Talk Radio Network. All right, stay tuned. I'll be back on the other side of this break.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. My name again is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. I'm going to read his article, or not really an article, it's a statement. I'm going to read Michael Jordan's statement in its entirety. Of course, I have linked to it if you want to check it out yourself. But let me go ahead, and it is on a website called TheUndefeated.com, TheUndefeated.com. I thought this was a sports site, but really it's not. All right, it's not really exclusively a sports site. So anyway, it's titled, Michael Jordan, I Can No Longer Stay Silent. His statement on the shootings of African Americans and the targeting of police officers. As a proud American, a father who lost his own dad in a senseless act of violence, and a black man, I have been deeply troubled by the deaths of African Americans at the hands of law enforcement and angered by the cowardly and hateful targeting and killing of police officers. So I'm going to disagree with him. Nothing cowardly about it. I mean, cowards do not attack armed people. But, you know, nevertheless, he's entitled to his opinion. I just disagree with it. I grieve with the families who have lost loved ones, as I know their pain all too well. His father, I remember when his father was killed at a rest stop. And the people, before you start screaming black on black crime, it was a white boy and a black, interracial, you know, criminal couple that robbed him and killed Michael Jordan's father. All right, so he says, I was raised by parents who taught me to love and respect people regardless of their race or background. So I am saddened and frustrated by the divisive rhetoric and racial tensions that seem to be getting worse as of late. I wonder if he's been checking out what's our buddy name up there in Wisconsin. Well, you know, he's not my buddy, but the sheriff, David Clark, I wonder if he's been listening to that guy. But anyway, he says, I know this country is better than that, and I can no longer stay silent. We need to find solutions that ensure people of color receive fair and equal treatment, and that police officers who put their lives on the line every day to protect us all are respected and supported. Again, I don't have to agree with everything that he's saying. You know, my experiences, my analysis is different than his, but I am glad that he is saying something. Over the past three decades, I have seen up close the dedication of the law enforcement officers who protect me and my family. I have the greatest respect for their sacrifice and service. I also recognize that for many people of color, their experiences with law enforcement have been different than mine. I have decided to speak out in the hope that we can come together as Americans and through peaceful dialogue and education achieve constructive change. To support their effort, I am making contributions of $1 million each to two organizations, the International Association of Chiefs of Police, newly established Institute for Community Police Relations, and the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. The Institute for Community Police Relations Policy and Oversight work is focused on building trust and promoting best practices in community policing. You know, Dee had a good suggestion yesterday, live in the community you policing. My donation to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, the nation's oldest civil rights law organization, will support its ongoing work in support of reforms that will build trust and respect between communities and law enforcement. Although I know these contributions alone are not enough to solve the problem, I hope the resources will help both organizations make a positive difference. We are privileged to live in the world's greatest country, a country that has provided my family and me the greatest of opportunities. The problems we face didn't happen overnight, and they won't be solved tomorrow. But if we all work together, we can foster greater understanding, positive change, and create a more peaceful world for ourselves, our children, our families, and our communities. And so that is Michael Jordan's statement on the killings of African Americans that have been dominating the media. And the killings of the police officers in Baton Rouge and Dallas. Like Michael Jordan said, he's had different experiences than, you know, most of us have had with law enforcement officers, myself excluded, because, again, you know, I have not really had that many bad interactions with cops. I can only think of one, but I am not that guy who's going to sit up there and say, just because it hasn't happened to me or it is not happening in my community, that I'm going to pretend like it ain't happening everywhere else in other communities, okay? So I stand in unity with them. But, again, I don't know what Michael Jordan, the books he has read coming up as a young man. I don't know if he's ever read Malcolm X's biography. I don't know if he's ever read any of the writings of many of the various Black Panther party members like Angela Davis, Huey Newton, and many, many others as well who have written books about racism and white supremacy and the oppression of all people in this country. I just don't know. I don't know if he knows what COINTELPRO is and how the U.S. government was involved in the assassination of not only Martin Luther King Jr., but also Malcolm X and many other people, many other, you know, quote-unquote leaders in our community. If I don't know if he hasn't been exposed to the same literature, the same history, if he hasn't done the same research that I have done, then I'm going to assume he's like most Americans, a victim of propaganda, a victim of lies and whatnot. So, you know, but again, I don't have to agree with everything that he says in his statement to appreciate him wanting to do something. I don't know much about that other that organization he was talking about. I am aware of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. So, you know, I hope that money is put to good use and what have you. But like he acknowledges, he's not under the illusion that, you know, just donating a couple of million dollars is going to solve the problem. But again, he is doing something. Okay. And I'm wondering if he's had this change of heart, if it's come with as he's gotten older and he's not so concerned about, you know, earning as much money as he can from corporations and what have you. I don't know. I don't know if you know, Carmelo Anthony of the New York Knicks, when he issued an open call for professional athletes to do more in these communities, you know, I don't know. But I'm glad he's doing something and saying something, somebody with his high profile, you know. It's about time, but I'm going to keep it positive. I'm going to keep it positive. He's doing something. Better late than never. Will what he's doing, you know, lead to any change or whatnot? I doubt it. I doubt it. You know, I doubt it. But, you know, again, he's doing something. He's doing something. And I think if we all did something as much as we can to combat these problems, you know, then we would find change. We would bring about, you know, a substantive change. You know, my thing is though, if the 80%+ of non-white people of the world just operated on the golden rule of never helping racist, white supremacists in any capacity, then the system of the global system of racism and white supremacy would collapse. 9%, less than 10% of the population, it is not logical that they could dominate the entire planet. It is not logical. They can't do it. It's mathematically impossible. So what they have to do is, as we saw in the 1600s, where they made the Irish, the Scottish, and other non-English people honorary whites, they've done the same with the non-white people of the world. They have to have a large percentage of non-white people helping them in order to do what they're doing. There's just no other way to explain it. One out of 10 people cannot control, you know, the other 9 people unless you get at least 4, 5, 6 of that 9 to help you. It just seems, you know, logical to me. It may not seem logical to others. So I'm taking the pledge. I promise you right now, I pledge right now to never ever help a racist white supremacist harm anyone, not just black people, anyone. Not going to help them. Now, I'm not talking about when we're forced to use a financial system and we're forced to use banks and stuff like that, because I've heard people say, oh, you're supporting white supremacy if you're participating in any capacity. No, the hell you're not. I don't believe that's true. Yes, we need to replace the system, but, you know, all the banks are not participating in investing in 21st century slavery and human trafficking through the private prisons. And all you people who have put money into these black banks, please, please ask these people running these banks if they are invested in the CCA, Correction Corporation of America, or they are investing your money, because it's your money, in the GEO Group or MTC or any of the smaller private prison corporations, because damn, what good is it putting your money into a black bank that's just going to invest into your own oppression? So anyway, I didn't mean to go off on a tangent. I'm appreciative of Michael Jordan's attempt at counter-racism. Let's go to the phone lines of area code 414. You have some thoughts for us today?
Yeah, give me 1 second. I can all speak to that.
Okay.
Hello, we heard?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Let me.
Please, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I got a few thoughts. I guess the first thought would be about the article about the Dallas police officers filling the quotas. When I talked to you the last time when I chimed in, I told you that I was actually arrested by two black police officers.
Yes, I remember.
And at the time, that I didn't know how I felt about, you know, being arrested by the black police officers. And the article today kind of put it in perspective.
Hey, I don't mean to interrupt you. I don't mean to interrupt you, but it's hard for us to hear you. You had to
what I'm about to say. So I would like to ask for DGQ to be enacted. But how I feel is that black people should not be police officers and or enforcement officials. I think that when you look at the history of the police department up until present day, what the police are doing to us, how we get treated, I take the position that we should not engage in that job. Now, on to Mr. Jordan. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Am I being heard?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hello?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay. All right. With Mr. Jordan, my oldest daughter, I have two daughters. My oldest daughter is named Jordan, after Mr. Michael. And I would say that I just start attempting to become less confused. Because when I grew up, I'm 35, race wasn't discussed in my household, and so I was just unaware. But I do kind of take issue with what Mr. Jordan had to say. For him to say that Republicans buy shoes too, while black people were being murdered behind those shoes, I really don't put any appreciation and or I really don't, I wish he would have kept what he said to himself in actuality, because I feel like it's a little too late. As much support as black people have supported Mr. Jordan. I heard somebody say something today, when people say like, we don't support black businesses. And then somebody said, well, you will have to discredit all the black funeral homes, all the black barber shops, things like that. So, I just feel like this. I think that it's time for people to start taking a little more personal responsibility for the things that's happening to us. I know that we are all victims, and that we shouldn't, cause any more problems and, things of that nature. But the police and the military are the first lines of defense for our opponents. So it's like, what the hell are we doing? I'm in my line.
Okay. All right. Thank you for those comments. Let me go ahead and clear the queue. Again, anytime anybody wants to come in, and you can come in again if you so choose, hit star 6 and 1. I feel where you're coming from. You have VGQ. My definition or interpretation of what VGQ means is a little bit different than some other people I have heard. I feel like a person has VGQ if they're doing or saying something in opposition to racism and white supremacy, like, you know, the two brothers and the one in Baton Rouge and the one in Dallas. I feel like they got VGQ. That's why I'm not going to condemn them. I don't have to condone it either. You know, they got VGQ. All right. But when I see somebody like a David Clark who calls for the extermination of black people and what have you, I do not assign victim status to him. I assign victimizer status to him. I am not of the opinion that black people are ignorant about racism. We should be experts on it as long as it has been practiced against us. I don't think many, I'm sure there are probably some, depending upon the household they grew up in, but I don't think any person is blatantly ignorant about racism and white supremacy. And Mr. David Clark, a man of his education, a man of his experience, is not ignorant about racism and white supremacy. He knows exactly what he is saying and is doing, and he knows that he is going to be rewarded. I think I read today that he just got another Officer of the Year award. So, there, you know, but in terms of Michael Jordan, those comments were not said publicly, but said to a friend who leaked it to the media about why Michael Jordan was being, because, I mean, it was a big campaign here in North Carolina to get that racist Jesse Helms out of here. I mean, this man had been occupying that Senate seat going back to the 60s, man. This dude was a straight-up Dixiecrat and what have you, but he was a Republican. And Harvey Gantt was, you know, a melanated former mayor of Charlotte who was challenging him for that seat. And so, you know, Michael Jordan, again, this is the first time I've heard him speak out on a serious social political issue. I appreciate everything that you had to say. You feel how you feel about him. I also very disappointed in him, but again, I'm going to say better late than never. You know, better late than never, because like I said, I stated, I don't know what kind of household he grew up in, what he was taught. I don't know what he read. I don't know what type of media he's exposed himself to or what have you. I don't know. So that's why he's going to, you know, take the view that he's taking about police officers and them being heroes and protecting and serving people, when that just simply doesn't hold up to scrutiny. So I'll write it off as just, you know, ignorance about the police. But this man, you know, Jordan ain't ignorant about racism and what have you. So I just say better late than never. Because, you know, a lot of people, man, they don't even engage in counter racism, you know, until, you know, they know enough about it to engage in counter racism and what have you. So, you know, I guess, you know, I'm just saying everybody in their own time. So, but do I think that there's any benefit to what he's saying? Yes, I do think there's, you know, because he's acknowledging the problem. He's acknowledging that black people are being murdered by cops, okay? And that's important coming from somebody with a high profile like him. We can use that as propaganda, weapons against our enemies. You know, we have to be just like our enemies. You know, we have to flip the script on them. We have to, you know, use the same kind of tactics that they use against us. But, I mean, you are correct, though, in your assessment that this man, you know, for all these years and for all the support that he was getting from black people, that he had never even, not even spoken on, okay, let alone the violence the police are inflicting upon our communities. But I never even heard him say a word after somebody then got stabbed or robbed of their Jordans. you know, people fighting in the line. I never heard him make a comment about, come on, people, now we shouldn't be fighting each other over these shoes and whatnot. And just, you know, just no social consciousness whatsoever. So, you know, again, all I could say is better late than never that he's speaking out. Let me see. Did you have something else to add?
Yeah, I wanted to just chime back in with a question. I agree with what you're saying, especially the part about where the propaganda, where what he said could be used as propaganda. I totally agree with that. But the question that I will ask is Mr. Jordan feeling guilty because he's laying up with that white woman?
I doubt that, because he's been dating white women for a very long time. I don't know. I don't think he feels any guilt about who his dating habits. But that's why I brought up Carmelo Anthony. After Carmelo, I'm sorry.
I didn't hear what you your commentary on Carmelo.
I said in the beginning, I wonder if he's saying what he's saying because Carmelo Anthony didn't put all them athletes on blast to do something.
That's an excellent point, Mr. Reed. You know, I mean, you know, I don't know, I'm in Milwaukee, man, so the pressure, you know, you were aware, Mr. Clark. I think that's Uncle Ruckus in real life from the Boondocks. Like, that's what we live in here. You understand what I'm saying? But, you know, it's just like, okay, we have a black person that's running for the DA's office here, okay? And I don't know her personally, but I know the family that she comes from, okay? And I'm not going to speak any anti-blackness right now, but we all know what the DA's position is in this quote-unquote justice system.
Right.
Now, to be in a place where the Milwaukee right now is number one per capita for locking up black men, you know, there you go. So I'm just tired of, man, black people aiding this system. It's ridiculous. You understand what I'm saying? And I'm talking about the babies, man. Like, me and my lady was having a conversation, and she like, okay, well, you know, we got to start taking more responsibility, you know, to, you know, whatever, whatever. And I asked the question. I said, a child that doesn't have, well, first I asked her, did she think that TV and the radio was psychological warfare? She agreed with that. So my next question was, do you think that a child and or a person stands a chance if they don't have a strategic, almost military codified response to what's being waged against us? And then after she thought about it, man, she had to agree, like, this stuff that's being waged upon us is scientific, it's right. Militarized, and I think that too many black people underestimate the opponent that we up against. You understand what I'm saying? We being ripped, murdered, and black people are, man, just, you know, I said enough, Mr. Reed. Thank you.
You're welcome. I know everybody, you know, a lot of people that listen to Black Talk Radio Network. Well, I can't see a lot of people because we, you know, have I think last month over 100,000 people tuned in to the station. But I know a few people, more than a few people who are associated with this network are familiar with the work of Neely Fuller Jr. and what have you. But, you know, but Mr. Fuller also encourages people, if I'm not mistaken, to adopt their own codes and whatnot. He's giving you a workbook. He's giving you a starting place, you know, but you have to adopt your own code. You still should ask questions. Is this logical? Is this not logical? I don't consider it to be anti-blackness to speak facts. If black people are, in fact, harming other black people, I don't think that's anti-black to say that this black man named David Clark is a clear and present danger to black people. All right. That was said, that was suggested to me yesterday when I posted a video on our Facebook page, proxy racism, which is a term I developed to describe the behavior of non-white people assisting the system of racism and white supremacy. And a person left a comment on the video where I shared, you know, factual information about Mr. Clark, what he has said. I shared his own words, you know, via video, part of that video. I incorporated that video into, you know, that video, and the person said, you know, let's not focus on the victim. Let's, you know, let's not focus on another black person. Let's not focus on a non-white person. And I'm like, this man called for more than one time. This latest time was just the latest. This isn't the first time he has called for the extermination of black people. Now, I don't give a damn what your color is. If you're calling for the extermination of black people, you cannot be ignored. You just simply can't be ignored. That's just not logical to ignore such a clear and present threat and not warn people about the threat and who made the threat. That's not being anti-black. It is an observation based on facts. And it is a fact that that man hates black people. You can tell it from the way he talks, unless he's just a trained monkey by white supremacists not in control of his own free will. To me, that's anti-blackness. Where you think when you call black people like little monkey children, that's what white supremacists say. And that's really what you're suggesting. And when you suggest that, and I'm not talking about the caller, I'm just talking in general. When you suggested me that black people have some kind of inferior thought process and everything confuses them, that telling me then that you believe that we are intellectually inferior. I take that as anti-blackness. All right, so, but I tell you, man, I don't have the magic bullet solution, but to what the caller said in terms of we're not taking this serious and that we are not formulating proper responses. I know I'm paraphrasing what he said, but he said it's a science. They got it down to a science. It's military, you know. All of it, all the media, just cause it's CNN, just cause it's Fox, just cause it's ABC, just cause it's the Washington Post, that's still part of a military campaign called psychological operations to feed you with lies, to feed you with disinformation, to misdirect you so that you're, you know, will be thrown off the trail in case you are on the right track of determining, you know, where this problem is originating from and what have you. And so, I agree with that. I agree with that. On Tando Radio Show, you know, they were talking about the Chinese studying the United States military and adopting their tactics and then also, you know, building onto those tactics and then using the United States military's weapons against themselves. We don't operate like that as a group. We don't operate like that. Maybe some of us, small groups or individuals, may operate like that, but for the most part, we are not operating on that level. I have long held the fact that anything they can do, we can do too. Just like they have their propaganda networks, we can build our propaganda networks. We need to be confronting them on every level. One more thing that I want to touch upon that the caller brought up before I move to the next story, about the DA. Now, he knows that person's family. He didn't want to say anything negative about them, so I don't know, you know, if these are people who are conscious about racism and white supremacy, or if they are, you know, thinking on the terms of, you know, I want to be an American and all this and that. But I do believe in infiltrating the system. While I did say I don't think that you can solve the problem from the inside, but you can gather intelligence from the inside. And in certain positions, you can make a difference on a smaller level. And I am reminded of two black DAs, one down in Texas and one in Ken Thompson in New York. And especially the DA in New York, who has reopened. He didn't have to do this, but he revisited many cases that the DA had prosecuted, the prior DA had prosecuted, and it has led to the release of people from the prison slave plantation. He also told those cops to stop arresting people on minor possession charges and flooding his office with all of this minor stuff, like tickets for marijuana or cannabis and whatnot. The other one down there in Texas, he has also, I think they call it like a conviction integrity unit or something like that. They got some name for it. He's done the same thing. He has freed people from the plantation and what have you. And so I do see a person in that position being able to make a difference in individual lives that they come across on a very, you know, low level, on a very low level, okay? Those are just individuals in individual counties, you know, who decided they're going to practice justice in those instances. But then, you know, on the flip side of that, they still have to prosecute people for, you know, whatever the cops bring to them. They still have to prosecute those. So, I mean, it's like, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I do recommend infiltration. I would recommend infiltration of the police departments if for the DA's office and every level of government. But you have to be in there working undercover and gathering intelligence, gathering evidence on the system. And if you don't bring it forth yourself, you have to feed it to somebody else. Sort of like the WikiLeaks, you know, the hackers hacking to the DNC. They get those to WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks put the information out. You know what I'm saying? So I do see in that the spook who sat by the door. I could have just summed it all up by saying, watch that. Read Sam Greenlee's book, The Spook Who Sat by the Door, or go to YouTube and watch it for free, The Spook Who Sat by the Door. But see, that is not, I'm not saying we haven't had individuals to do that, but that is not what's happening right now. So those are just my thoughts on that. Let me see. You got another question or comment? Go ahead. More than welcome. 414, you there?
I'm here. I have muted myself. I wanted to just throw this out there. There was something that happened here, and I wanted your perspective on it. We had a situation where some of the youth were acting kind of rambunctious at a gas station. I think maybe some vandalism, but more or less just kind of being rowdy and loud. So one of the workers in the gas station comes outside. Now, they said that he shot in the air, right? But the kids are saying that he shot at them, okay? So after the situation happened, it was a lot of black people that were up there protesting. And basically shut the gas station down, Mr. Reed. I'm talking about, man, they posted up outside the gas station and had things to sell, okay? And, man, made the gas station owner actually drop his prices to under $2 a gallon. Now, that made the news because under $2 is illegal, which I didn't even know, that you can't go under $2. Anyway, that's kind of getting off the course. So they had them change the gas prices, basically shut them down, they end up, quote unquote, firing the guy from the gas station, and then it was a quote unquote, quote, compromise done where they said the black people was talking, the black person that was the spokesperson for the group was talking and said that, okay, well, we wanted a few things done and we got that accomplished. We wanted the guy fired, we wanted the guy arrested, and something else. I forget what the third point was, but that was it, right? Okay, so now this all happened, like, I want to say yesterday, day before yesterday, but also it was a homicide right there where them guys was taking a stand and protesting, and then it seemed like right after the homicide, man, the narrative changed a little bit, okay? So I just wanted to just put that out there, and from what I put out there, I would just like your perspective on what you heard.
In terms of if you had a group, first of all, we have to do self-reflection. We have to be willing to constructively criticize ourselves. And so given the conditions that we live under, it is not constructive for young teenagers or young people, especially if they're black, to be hanging out at a gas station and being rowdy and loud, you know. White kids in this area where I live, they get to do that, all right? They do that. They actually do that. Franklin Boulevard is a main thoroughfare in Gastonia, and every night or on the weekends, they're out there with their hot rod doing kid stuff, just doing kid stuff. They might be being loud or whatnot, but that's just not recommended. I would not recommend that. All right, if you want a party, you know, go somewhere safe. Go somewhere, you know, where things like that are least likely to occur. In terms of the protest, if they had set out their goals and they accomplished their goals, then I think that that's a good thing, you know. Now, if we want to critique whether their goals will lead to any kind of long-term solution at that location, then we could do so. But just in terms of if they set goals and they accomplish those goals, then, you know, that's a positive thing. You know, it's just whether or not, then the question becomes whether or not the goals that they set out will lead to long-term solutions. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it did. And the reason I asked your perspective is because, okay, being in the city, I think that what the guys got out there and did show how the economic face of the city can change, and I think that that was shut down. That's my perspective of the situation. Because
you think that was shut down? What do you mean? Any wider?
Man, I think that the homicide took place in that area, man, to get them guys to be out there to stop selling stuff out there, man, because they were affecting business. You understand what I'm saying? And so my perspective on it is this, and excuse my language, let's reconcile so we can keep getting you niggas money and let's get back to normal, back to business. You understand what I'm saying? Because what happened after that was totally different from the narrative that you usually see. Black people collecting black dollars. You understand what I'm saying? And, you know, I'm just wanting to take this perspective. The system has killed the president. You understand what I'm saying? So when I see these homicides, when I see these police officers being shot, I don't buy the narrative right away that it's black people killing black people.
Right, right. And that's kind of a good segue to my next story that I want to discuss. But if you wanted to wrap up on that particular information that you shared, please do so before I move on.
Oh, no, I was good. Thanks for taking the call, man. I'll listen to the rest of the program. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, that's a good segue. Brought up to this next story that I want to share with you, but before I do that, I am due for a station identification break. Also want to remind you of the crowdfunding Black Media campaign that we have ongoing. Also, I'm really happy I was able to obtain some software. You know, our donations are below what they were the month before, but I'm good at budgeting money and what have you. I can do a lot with a little bit. And I came across some software to make professional style videos, you know, and what have you. Somebody recommended to me, and I've been making videos while learning this software, so I hope to get better at it. And a couple of the videos have already gone viral, so that's some of the stuff that we engaged in terms of our media operations. That, you know, we use the funds for in terms of, you know, Black media. So I was really happy about that. But Black media, crowdfunding Black media campaign is ongoing. I still have not been able to get the small shirts yet. I might look for another vendor because these people here where I live, and again, you know, it's not that I don't want to, of course I want to buy Black, but I live in an area where there are very few Black people, okay? And so, you know, I was like, well, I might as well do this locally. They got a couple of Black people work there. But after these shootings of these cops, the white person I've been dealing with at this place that's here local, the screen printer local, she's showing a little bit of attitude, like they don't want to really do these Black radio stations matters T-shirts anymore, you know, because that sounds too similar to Black Lives Matter. And so, you know, I'm kind of like trying to find another vendor and what have you. I really don't want to do the online because I want to be able to make sure my order is right before I pay for it and what have you. I had to share that. I thought that was interesting. So that's why I don't have the small shirts yet. It's because of that, I just felt a certain kind of way about it wasn't so much of what she said, but how she said it. And just, you know, her whole attitude just seemed different towards me since the killing of those white cops. But a couple of Black cops got killed, too. But anyway. So I got plenty of large, I got plenty of mediums. I do need to get some more extra, extra large. Those went fast. Only got a couple left, but I will replenish those as soon as possible for those who have been waiting on those. I just, you know, I just feel a certain kind of way of continuing to do business with them. All right, so I'm going to take a station identification break, and then on the other side I'll jump into this story about these children being victims of a terrorist attack in Florida at this nightclub. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital Black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new Black media for the new millennium. Tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new Black media for the new millennium. All right, the next story that I want to share with you occurred in Fort Myers, Florida. You probably heard about the shooting which killed two and injured 17. I thought it might have been 18. I read in another article. And the Los Angeles Times, this is their headline. Florida club shooting that killed two, injured 17, not an act of terrorism, police say. Now I know that people have different interpretations of the definition of terrorism. I often refer to what the police do as terrorism. because it is using violence to enforce a social or political policy. So I do view that as terrorism. When you are breaking into people's homes in these so-called drug raids and ending up killing people and damaging their property for over some freaking, you know, substance that you think that you can tell them that they can't use, you know. I mean, yeah, we should discourage use of drugs and all of that, but you don't get to damn break in people's house and kill them because you suspect they might have some drugs in the house. I view that as terrorism. I view the drug war as terrorism. You're using violence to enforce a political agenda on people. That's terrorism. All right. Now, in terms of the violence that we see, like we saw at the Pulse nightclub in Florida, in Orlando, Florida, if that's true, if that wasn't a false flag and what have you, then I would consider that an act of terrorism. All right. But, you know, I would add the caveat, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. I think Ronald Reagan said that, if I'm not mistaken. All right. So, but I would view that as an act of terrorism to force, because the guy mentioned he did it because of the bombing of Afghanistan, which he had, I don't know, I can't say he never been there. He wasn't born there. But he still viewed that as his homeland, and that's what he mentioned, you know. That was to change a political policy. That was an act of violence to change a political policy. So that does fit the definition, the dictionary definition of terrorism and what have you. But then at the same time, on the flip side of that, if I'm terrified, then, you know, who am I to tell people who are victims of violence that wasn't terrorism because the guy or the person didn't have a political agenda. They just, you know, crazy or just, you know, sick in the head or whatever reason it is. They like killing for fun, you know, but they don't state a political agenda or whatnot. But I bet you if you ask the people who are the victims of such individuals if that was an act of terrorism, they would tell you, yes, that I'm terrified. So anyway, very few details are being shared. They detained three people, but they haven't made any arrests. Okay, they could be detaining these people as material witnesses. We just simply don't know. They're not sharing the information. But for them to just come out and say it wasn't an act of terrorism, I'm like, well, how do you know? How do you know that? How can you say, you know, within 24 hours before the investigation is completed that this wasn't an act of terrorism? How do we know this wasn't another Dylann Roof type white supremacist who went to a black club with a bunch of black children and it was kiddies night? Okay, so for those who say kids shouldn't be at the club, their parents dropped them off and their parents picked them up. This was like kids' night, high school students and what have you. No different than if it had been in the high school gym or what. No alcohol was being served or anything like that. All right. So, you know, I'm still waiting for more information, but it seems to me that the media wants to, but can't just yet because they don't know who's been detained. But they want to paint this as another black-on-black crime incident. And it very may well be that some melanated individual programmed by the mainstream media, I'm talking about the radio stations that play murder music 24/7, you know, maybe he was a fan of Al Pacino in Scarface or something like that. I don't know. And they think they're gangsters. You know, maybe they were inspired by, you know, Al Capone and those kind of gangster movies and they want to be gangsters. I don't know. But I am not going to jump to the conclusion before all the information comes out. And I grant it. Sometimes, you know, we don't get to all the information. All we get is what they tell us. We don't know if it's correct or not. But anyway, you know, I'm just waiting for more information on this. Now, let's just work under the assumption. Don't mean to assume things. That's one of the things I've learned from a black drill sergeant in the military, that assuming things makes an ass out of you and me. So don't assume nothing, because we don't want to look like asses. And so, you know, but, you know, granted, the only way I can talk about what I want to talk about is if I work under that assumption. Let's not pretend like violence isn't occurring in our communities. Now, the violence that is occurring in our communities is not because, like David Clark said, they are slime and subhuman culture within the African-American community or anything like that. But we do need to address this. Something terribly wrong where somebody can just open fire on other people who look like them. And I'm going to share something with you that happened when I was like 12 years old. The statute of limitations had run out and nobody was killed. But I was a little misguided, brainwashed 12-year-old, and I was gangbanging in the streets of Detroit. Now, I was with two other individuals that was in our gang, and so we were going wherever we were going, and one of them pulls out a gun. We were on this football field, matter of fact, that was across from the boys' club, and we were, you know, there were people coming in and out. This black community, all black people, right? And so he takes out the gun, and he starts shooting at him. And I was like, what the is you doing? Why are you shooting at them? They ain't done nothing to us. I mean, even then, I was hesitant about doing violence. Now, if I had to fight somebody, you know, to survive on the streets, I'm going to fight you. I'm going to fight you. In fact, you know, that's how they recruited me. I had to fight these people every day until I joined them. That's how they wore me down, because I was a pretty, you know, big for my age, and you know, they had known that I could scrap and whatnot, and I had to fight like two or three of them at a time every day until I joined them. But I did not want to do that violence. I did not want to harm other people who looked like me. And so something is terribly wrong, man, that our youth have been so desensitized to violence that they would do violence to each other. Now, am I blaming them? No, I'm put the blame where the blame squarely belongs, on American society. That's where I'm putting the blame. Now, how do we solve that? How do we stop our youth from being influenced by the violence that's in American media? You know, I don't even like talking about him, but I have to. The proxy races up there in Milwaukee County, Wisconsin, David Clark, you know, when he talks about this subhuman culture, who created that culture? But white people created that culture. I'm old enough to have, matter of fact, when I was 12 years old, that was around the time of the birth of hip hop, Sugar Hill Gang and all of that. And we were, and their music was not talking about doing violence on anyone. But now that is so pervasive in all media, targeting black communities. And that's why I opened up this platform to share it with Clear the Airways Project and have Brother Kwabena come on every 2 weeks on a Thursday to talk about, you know, the work that they are engaged in cleaning up the airwaves. White people are in control of these stations. White people are in control of the music industry. They are the ones who only sign people who will bring them violence-filled songs and what have you, and songs promoting a rape culture, songs promoting a murder culture, songs promoting a drug culture. This is on the public airwaves, on your radio. It don't matter if they bleep out a cuss word here or there. Like, these kids don't know, you know, what is being said. So, again, I don't know who did this act of terrorism against these young black kids at this nightclub, at this, you know, thing that was set up, because our kids really don't have no places to go. You know, we hear that a lot and what have you. So, you know, I put that blame, obviously, on the individual. Used his free will to, you know, engage in whatever they engaged in and shooting at these people, if that is the case. But at the same time, wider society, you do not get off the hook. The Pentagon pays hundreds of millions of dollars to produce propaganda in these movies, in these war movies, in these movies talk about terrorism and whatnot. You know, that movie American Sniper, where this white man ambushes hundreds of people in their own homeland to kill them and what have you. The Pentagon provided, Department of Defense, excuse me, same thing, provided part of that budget. It was one of the highest grossing films during that particular year. People were saying, oh, let's get it. Look, this film deserves an Oscar and all this and that. And then even after people watched that, there were reports of them coming out, straight out the movie, and attacking people who look like they might be Muslim or Arab or whatever, non-white, non-Christian. And they were so don't think that this violence media doesn't have a role in the violence. That's probably one of the most watched genres in America in terms of television programming and movie is violence. They call them action movies or thrillers or something like that. And gangster rap, I mean, man, all of these Clear Channel stations, all these Radio 1 stations, these corporations are pumping this garbage into people's minds, and everybody doesn't have a strong mind and is not able to resist the programming. Especially if, you know, they haven't had prior programming not to engage in that type of stuff. So when McDonald's, Walmart, name a corporation, is paying for advertisement on a radio station that's promoting violence, targeting black people, don't you point the finger at black people, because we ain't in control of it. So, you know, that's not the magic bullet solution, but it seems logical to me that if you put garbage in, you get garbage out, right? If you put violence in, you get violence out. But to what the caller brought up, when I hear about all these people being caught, shot in Chicago, you know, how do I know they're even true stories? They could be inflating the numbers. It's not like we got a honest media in this country. I mean, they lie to us every day. Look at how they lie to you now about Hillary Clinton and the DNC servers being hacked by Russia and what have you. So we don't even know if those are actual bodies that to be counted. They could be inflating the numbers. I don't know. But whenever I hear about those reports, I do not automatically assume that that's only black people being killed by other black people. It could be white people killing other black people, killing black people. It could be Hispanic gangs killing, you know, black people. It could be cops killing black people. So I'm you know, he did bring up a good point. Don't automatically assume that that is what's going on. But at the same time, if you're going to condemn, again, if you're going to condemn acts of violence, then condemn the acts of violence the number one gangster on the planet is engaged in. And I'm talking about the CEO of USA Inc. How many innocent bystanders have they killed? So, again, I'm just offering a suggestion that if we don't want such a violent society, then maybe we shouldn't be saturating a society with all this violent media. Just food for thought, but, condolences to the victims. One of the young men was a promising athlete. I don't know what his grades were like, but, you're supposed to be able to keep good grades in order to play sports, and he played football and basketball. His name was John or Gene Achilles. No, that's his father. That was his father, Sean Achilles. Only 14, two teens were killed, a 14-year-old Sean Achilles and 18-year-old Stephon Strouder. I think it was Strouder who was the college prospect, that he had opportunity to get, a scholarship to go to college playing basketball or whatnot. So this happened at a club called Club Blue, and it's just a tragedy. The shooting happened as the club was closing and parents were picking up their children. The Post also said there was armed security at the event. So, again, that just lends more evidence to my assertion that police, same thing, you got armed security there. They do not stop crime. They respond to it. So, it's just sad, man, that all of this is going on. And we just got a lot of work to do. But it is not going to solve any problems if we are not honest about the root causes of the problems that we see out there. I want to know who's bringing all the guns into Chicago. Besides the drug cartels, with a pass from the DEA, besides Miami cops who, have been selling weapons to drug cartels and what have you, besides the U.S. government, which walked thousands of guns during the Bush administration and the Obama administration across the border into Mexico into the hands of drug cartels, these are all documented facts. It's been published. And who's to say then, if they got those guns cheap down there in Mexico, those drug cartels didn't turn around and say, damn, we can make a lot of money selling these on the streets of America. So where are all these guns coming from? I don't know any black people that's manufacturing arms anywhere in the world, for that matter. They all get their weapons from white people. I don't know anywhere in the world that black people are in control of manufacturing cocaine and growing in the poppy fields and all of that kind of stuff that U.S. military is guarding over there in Afghanistan. I don't know why people don't put two and two together. Well, I do know. It's because of the media, man. Malcolm X was not. That was not an understatement. That's not the word I'm looking for. Malcolm X was not wrong in his assessment that media controls the minds of the masses, and it controls them in more ways than people realize. The American news media is not there to help you put two and two together. They're out there to feed you the information that is the system wants you to have. You have to do your own research. All right, so those are my thoughts. Condolences to the victims, whoever is responsible. I hope that they are caught, and I hope that justice is done in the name of these victims. But, I just don't want to hear from people about, black people don't care about the violence that's going on in our communities, because that's a lie. That's a straight-up propaganda lie from people who hate us. You just want to make excuses for killer slave catchers. So, again, they are ruling out terrorism, but terrorism is a relative term. And they are offering scant details. They have three people in custody, but nobody's been charged. We got to stop this, people. Even if that, y'all know the gangbangers on our street, don't be afraid of them. I talk to them. We got to, man. We got to. We got to talk to the young people and help them see. You know, I'm not saying lecture them, just grab them off the street and lecture them because you might get shot or something like that. Well, I mean, but just try to build a relationship with them. Try to build a relationship, and over time, you will have the opportunity to drop knowledge on them. Give them a DVD or something. Make them understand slavery was never abolished. And that, you know, you can't be out here doing what you're doing unless you want to be a slave or you want to be 6 feet under. And if you're doing what you're doing because you got to do it because of survival, and I'm real about that too, then you need to develop a codified means to doing so. That means no standing on the corner selling drugs. That means no hanging out in the parking lot of gas stations being rowdy and selling drugs or whatever it is you selling and what have you. You know, be codified, man. You don't want to draw attention to yourself. Don't be a nuisance to the community and people wouldn't call cops on you. Do what you got to do, but do it indoors. I'm not going to judge you. Because it ain't like I ain't been there. All right, so I want to move on from that. Let me see. I'm going to take another station identification break. I'm going to kick some music from Sincere Nokwari, God Likes Beats, Beat Tape Lecture, Volume 1. We'll pick a song from that beat tape. Sincere is working on some new projects, and as soon as he's done with them, he will let us know. And if he allows us, we will share it with you on air. You know, this is the type of stuff I call message music. It's a message with a beat to it. We need more of that. And the mainstream, you know, radio stations, they don't want that. They don't want that. So, again, Black Talk Media Project exists to help you build your own radio platforms, digital radio platforms that don't cost as much as money as you might think. You start off small, and as your audience grows, of course your costs are going to go up. But by then, hopefully, you know, people will be supporting it, or you'll find other avenues of revenue to support. But we cannot just sit around with only one strategy of trying to clear the airways. Again, I fully support clearing the airways of your local terrestrial radio station. There is no justification, there is no excuse for murder music, for rape music, for drug music to be promoted on public FCC regulated airways. All this obscene stuff. But again, see, this is why I say you want to point your finger at the people, but the damn government is orchestrating it all along with these corporations. So instead of us waiting on them, again, do what you got to do. Oppose the enemy on all fronts. But then provide the people with an alternative radio station where they can tune in, and listen to music that will edify them. Build a platform for the local artists that's putting out the positive music they can't get on the local radio station. Come on, people. We can do it, man. Ain't nothing holding us back but our imagination. If you can imagine it, you can do it. Before Black Talk Radio Network as a platform was created, I imagined it in my mind. And then I did the research and the trial and error in figuring out how to do what we do. So the hard part's over for you. Only thing it is for you, you know, saying or identifying that this is something that you want to do and reaching out to us at Black Talk Media Project. So When we come back on the other side, I want to talk about the, it appears, according to two, well, I should only say one source. Right now, it's only one source, called Russia Today. I wouldn't consider it a second source because they're just relaying information from this Turkish paper. But this Turkish paper is reporting that a retired U.S. military commander of NATO was the mastermind behind the failed coup attempt in Turkey. And the CIA was also implicated along with a Nigerian bank, which was used to distribute the funds. So that'll be the next story. And also the DNC convention opened today under a cloud of disgrace, as hacked DNC emails show the process was rigged all along for Hillary Clinton. I think Debbie Wasserman Schultz even got booed off the stage today. Might have some audio for you on that. All right, you're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. We will be back on the other side.
You know, you are the reason for me continuing, Dr. Anderson, and I just pray every day, and I just wonder what, you know, what holds you up and what keeps you going. I know it's a wonderful wife that you have. Cause Dr.
Ladies
Joanne
and gentlemen,
is
the President
awesome.
Of the United States and Mr. Christian Champagne.
You have to ask yourself, what is a state? And you have to take an inventory of every single thing that holds it to the making of a state. Start with a safety pin to hold your child's diaper together. If you've got to buy a safety pin from your former colonial master, then you are lying when you say you built a state. You're a sham. If you're going to build a state, then everything that's needed to maintain that state should be ready. You should have trained people to have your armor. Your people, not mine.
I'ma do my right here, friendly. I'ma make a killing in D.C. Cause I know Obama, y'all don't tell my mama, I'm moving east to D.C. I'ma do my right here, friendly. I'ma make a killing in D.C.
When you don't have all those things functioning for you in your hands, you're an imitation of a state. We have done the wrong thing with our children. Let them have that choice about what to study. You study what we need. A few years ago, when I was in East Germany, a German teacher told me, he said, I know right now how many refrigeration workers I'm going to need 20 years from now. So I turned to the school and said,
I'm going to make a killing in D.C. Cause I know what I'm going to tell my mama, I'm moving east to D.C. I'ma do my right here, friendly. I'ma make a killing in D.C. Cause I know what I'm going to make some money, mama, you go be proud of me. I'ma do my right here, friendly. I'ma make a killing in D.C. Cause I know what I'm going to tell my mama, I'm moving east to D.C. I'ma do my right here, friendly. I'ma make a killing in D.C.
I'm an avid baseball player and a huge fan of Chicago White Sox. That's right. My neighborhood is tough. It isn't always safe. And just recently, I was robbed while walking home from school. But those challenges have not stopped me from wanting to have a better, safer
don't have to be bold enough to line our children up and say that in order to maintain our state, we need so many harbor experts. We need so many mining engineers, so many people who know metals, so many oceanographers, so many people that handle the fisheries. Now, what do you want to study? He said music. Is it Bill State? With a bill of state. First things first. You know people have to be healthy. You know people have to be educated. You know people have to be fed. So you train people to do these basic things. And once these things are taken care of, and you've got extra, I don't mean 10 harbor managers, you've got 10, you got 20 in training. You've got all the people in place needed to hold the state together without you turning outside. Okay, Johnny, you want to play the violin, it's all right. But get the state straightened out first.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses. Welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. We only have like a few minutes, so I'm going to try to be really quick. Russia Today published this article, which is based on an article from this paper inside of Turkey. And it says a former commander of NATO forces in Afghanistan, retired U.S. Army General John F. Campbell, was the mastermind behind the failed military coup in Turkey, the Yeni Safak Daily has reported, citing sources close to the investigation. Let me go ahead and run this RT report, and you can listen.
It's Turkey now. What's happening there? Well, Turkey's casting suspicions much further afield, it seems, now in the aftermath of that big failed coup. Now it's implicating its supposed NATO ally, the United States. With more is Lizzie Phelan.
Tensions are rapidly escalating between the US and Turkey. The latest that we have is the Turkish justice minister blaming none other than the US President Barack Obama for knowing about that failed coup attempt. He said he knew about the July 15th coup attempt, quote unquote, as much as he knows his own name, and added, I'm sure that the US intelligence and U.S. Secretary of State knew about it, I'm absolutely sure, he said. On top of that, today, a leading pro-government newspaper, Yeni Safak, published a headline blaming a U.S. Commander General John F. Campbell of being one of the top figures behind the failed coup. This newspaper alleges that General Campbell handled some $2 billion of transactions via a Nigerian bank and used CIA connections to distribute those funds to pro-coup plotters. Now, these accusations are only going to stoke what seems to be rising anti-American sentiment in Turkey, to the extent that many last night were speculating that a fire that broke out near a NATO base in the western city of Izmir was an act of anti-American sabotage. And that fire comes after a temporary suspension of operations at the Incirlik base, which is the most important military base in Turkey for the United States, that prompted the Pentagon press secretary, Peter Cook, to say that the U.S. can continue its operations in the region without the base.
Incirlik is obviously an important part of our military campaign, and we've used it very effectively. We were able to conduct the campaign previously without having Incirlik. We have the ability to adjust our operations in such a way that we can account for problems or delays there.
And another sign that relations...
All right, I'm going to stop it there. You can watch the rest. I have corrected the link. I noticed that I put the wrong link in the program description. I have corrected that. So you do have the link. Again, this is on Russia Today. I will try to monitor, and even when I'm on the internet, I'm monitoring mainstream media to see what they're saying. But let's see what they have to say about this. I mean, when you name someone, former retired Army General John F. Campbell, that's pretty damn specific right there, man. I mean, they're giving details. So I would think that, you know, it would be pretty easy. Well, I'm not going to say it would be easy for news organizations, but I would think that, you know, you should be able to confirm this man's movement around the globe. There were reports that he had visited Turkey twice. In terms of the CIA, $2 billion, man, to overthrow. See what I'm saying? But they want to tell us that, oh, you know, we can't have tuition-free state colleges and universities that's already getting U.S. taxpayer money. But they got billions to invest in overthrowing these other countries, these non-white countries, these non-Christian countries and what have. And some of them are secular countries that they have overthrown. Libya was a secular country that they overthrew. So this is just more of the same, par for the course. Like Dr. King said over 40 years ago, the United States government is the greatest purveyor of violence on the face of the planet. But how many of you, as we condemn acts of violence in certain communities or whatnot, or by certain individuals against police officers, how many of you condemning the United States government for this failed coup attempt and for using your tax dollars to give to people to you know, facilitate this violent attempt? Now, why are they doing this? I have a clue. I don't know for sure, but I suspect this has to do with Turkey apologizing for shooting down that Russian jet that was flying in Syria to attack ISIS and U.S.-backed terrorists in Syria. And that I think he also had shut down the border where all of this stolen oil was being laundered. And I've read reports that ISIS, all of this stolen oil that they had was being, you know, put on the market by Israel. And I heard that he had shut that down. So number of reasons why they could have attempted to overthrow Turkey. Again, when has the United States not been engaged in this sort of activity is the question you must ask yourself. And so while we're still waiting on more information to emerge, I feel confident in saying, based on the history, based on, you know, even recent activities like the overthrow of Libya, which occurred in 2011, and just my knowledge on stuff from when I was in the military about, you know, why we went to push Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait, that I would say that I would give credence to these reports that the CIA was behind this. All right, so that's that story. You can check it out. The last story that I want to share with you, let me see, the Democratic National Convention opened today under a cloud of disgrace as hacked DNC emails show the process was rigged for Hillary Clinton. This has led to a class action lawsuit, and I did place a link. If you donated any kind of money to the Democrats, to the Bernie Sanders campaign, there is a class action lawsuit that has been filed. Matter of fact, let me play a video about that, all right? But before I play this video, let me just say this. Bernie Sanders was complaining that the system was rigged against him. But how logical is it for him to now get confirmation that the system was rigged and for him to go along with the rigging by continuing to endorse Hillary Clinton and campaign for her? And this is after the, he even, when he was questioned about will he continue to support Hillary Clinton after these revelations, he said, yeah. So he might, like Max and them, the brothers on New Abolitionist Radio, was saying, he was in on it from the beginning, a sheep herder and what have you for Hillary Clinton, because his actions are not logical. Is that the logical actions of somebody who had just been cheated to then endorse and help their opponent? That just doesn't seem logical. But here is the YouTube video on the lawsuit.
Good afternoon. My name is Jared Beck. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Beck and Lee in Miami, Florida. And today I wanted to make this video to announce the filing by our firm of a class action lawsuit on behalf of individuals who donated to the Bernie Sanders campaign as well as the DNC against two defendants, the Democratic National Committee and its chairperson, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And this is the complaint right here. Before I discuss the complaint in a little more detail, I did want to thank everyone who was involved in the preparation of this lawsuit over the past few days. It was a tremendous undertaking done on a very compressed time frame. First and foremost, I wanted to thank the many thousands of individuals across the country who contacted our law firm, whether by email, over the phone, social media, giving us our support and indicating that they want to be part of the lawsuit. This case is about you, and as attorneys for the proposed class, we intend to do our best to represent everyone in the proposed classes to the best of our ability. I'd also like to thank other members of our legal team, including my wife and law partner, Elizabeth Lee Beck, my colleague Colin O'Brien, as well as my colleague Antonio Hernandez, who assisted with the preparation of the lawsuit. The case was filed in the Southern District of Florida Federal Court, and there are a total of 121 named plaintiffs in the lawsuit, which is just a small fraction of the actual number of people who have signed retainer agreements with our firm. We decided that in the interest of time and given that, given the time frame presented by the upcoming Democratic National Convention, that was important to get this lawsuit on file. However, I did want to tell everyone, please, if you're interested in participating in this lawsuit or finding out how you can serve as a class representative, by all means, keep contacting our firm, send us an email, or contact us through the Facebook page that we've established, and we'll try to get that information to you as soon as possible.
All right, I'm going to stop it there. We only got a few minutes left. I have linked to this page, and I'm loving it, man. I'm loving it. The system is being exposed as the corrupt entity, rigged system that it is. And so I hope that these people are successful in getting their money back from the DNC. And that's something I've just never done. I've never donated money to a political campaign. Just you know, don't got money like that to be donating to anyone, you know, like, you know, in terms of politics and things of that nature. So anyway, more than ever, the system is being exposed. It's being rigged. I fully expect Hillary Clinton to become the next CEO of USA Inc. I think there will be massive voter fraud on the scale that we saw in 2000 with the selection of Bush in 2004 with that rigged election with the electronic vote flipping. Which also occurred in many other states that were holding Democratic primaries using electronic voting machines. There were lots of reports. We reported on it on this station about votes being flipped for Hillary Clinton. So, you know, I just don't see how anybody can blindly follow these people who are known liars, man. They're known liars. They're known to be immoral. They have no ethics whatsoever, but, you know, millions of people will still go out and vote for Hillary Clinton or, you know, support the Democrats, and just as many fools are out there supporting Donald Trump and what have you. It's just, you know, it's sad, but then at the same time, it's good. It's good that the system is being exposed, and perhaps this will push towards more people wanting to get rid of this system, to dissolve the corporation and start over, and, you know, using their free will to self-determination, coming up with something that would obviously be much better than this corrupt, evil system we have now. All right, that's our program. Coming right up is Tando Radio Show. Stay tuned for Tando Radio Show right here on Black Talk Radio Network. Also recognize the fact that you do live behind enemy lines. People are being enslaved. People are being killed. People are being having their wealth stolen from them, their labor stolen from them. And we don't live in I can't remember a good time in America ever. But it's not a good time. It's not a good time, man. And so we have to do all we can to protect ourselves, protect our families, and protect our communities from these people that seek to enslave us all. With that said, peace and blessings to all. Until tomorrow, I'm out.